Welcome to the October 2025 News Bulletin podcast for yacht and small craft marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. Dear colleague and fellow maritime professional, wherever I go these days, and I have been around a bit recently, and whoever I meet in the maritime world, be they small craft or commercial ship surveyors, loss prevention executives, insurers and underwriters, and even maritime regulators, it seems there is one subject that comes up time and time again. Can you guess? Ah yes, lithium-ion batteries, and more importantly the mounting challenges they are presenting in our industry. Perhaps that does not surprise you. Now please understand, I am not here to stymie innovation or prevent the advance of new technology, clearly the technology is amazing. However, I am concerned that people are kept safe when surrounded by lithium-ion batteries and, let's face it, they surround us these days. The bit I still grapple with is that we have invented what is clearly an excellent power source on the one hand, which meets our collective decarbonization aspirations, yet when an installation blows, we still have no reliable means of successfully putting out the resulting inferno. Frankly, that's crazy. How many people have to die, how many yachts, and how much cargo must end up at the bottom of the oceans before someone says, enough is enough, hang on. Stop. Let's review things, shall we? Last month, in my news bulletin, What Caught My Eye, column, I referenced a UK leisure narrowboat on the UK canal network in Northamptonshire that quite literally blew up without warning early one morning whilst on overnight charge. Had anyone been on board at the time, it is hard to imagine they would have survived such a blast. It was reported that windows in nearby craft in the marina were blown out and debris strewn around the place. This is the first such instance I know of on the UK inland waterways network, and it has sent a shockwave through the boating community, well, those who have heard about the incident, for it was reported only through local paper and obligatory social media, of course. But it was not deemed of sufficient importance to make national news headlines. Strangely, even the specialist canal boat media seems to have ignored the story too. Why? Surely at the very least the public should be made aware so they can make their own choices and informed decisions. The local fire brigade attended but could not put the fire out. The boat reportedly sank, and I guess everyone heaved a sigh of relief, only for it to resurface and for the fire to reignite. To those of us who have acquired some knowledge in this area, this does not come as a surprise. Captain Pat, based at a large suburban fire department in Michigan, a mechanical engineer with a background in R&D, holding multiple patents on electric vehicle technology, remarkably picked up this story and produced a thought-provoking video on what happened. I have subsequently reached out to Pat, and we have met online to discuss this issue in more detail. He is an illuminating character and something of an expert in this field. It is several years since IIAMS organized an Indian conference. Last month I had the absolute pleasure to spend time in Goa, India with IIAMS President, Captain Ruchindale, to participate in and speak at our Indian conference, and it was worth waiting all these years. The event was well attended in person, with others joining for the live YouTube broadcast. The conference was voted a great success by all those who attended. Delegates were treated to some exceptional speakers drawn from far and wide who covered a wide range of topics. My thanks to Ruchin, our speakers and all those who were involved behind the scenes to ensure the success of this event, in particular the media who were generous in the coverage and reporting of the event. A full report follows in this news bulletin. As you may be aware, IIAMS has significant interests in the superyacht coating sector through its successful, decade-old registered marine coatings inspector standard in partnership with stakeholders ICOMIA, Seabase and AkzoNobel. It is many years since the last conference took place in the Netherlands. But after a long absence, it is back. The Superyacht Coating Conference will return to IAI Amsterdam on the 18th and the 19th of November, running alongside Metstrade and the Superyacht Forum. The interactive approach of the conference will explore the latest developments in legislation, ISO standards, and sustainability, examine coatings from an owner's perspective, and present advances in coating inspection, advisor certification, and dispute resolution. The event program will also explore future requirements in international standards and guidelines, innovations in surface preparation, paint materials, and application techniques, as well as new coating-related legislation, anti-fouling coatings, and comprehensive quality assurance measures. I have a speaker slot at the conference and expect to be announcing the most significant development in the RMCI standard for a decade. If you make it to Metstrade, I hope to catch up with you there. And finally, as you have gathered from my long introduction, it has been a very busy month indeed. I wanted to inform you about the biggest regulation change, set to hit the UK under 24 metres commercial small craft sector for a quarter of a century. The new proposed MCA Sport and Pleasure Code is set to become regulation soon. The extensive consultation outcome report and annexes have been published. This consultation, which drew over 400 responses, sought views on a new statutory instrument and accompanying code, the Code of Practice for Small Vessels in Commercial Use for Sport or Pleasure, which will provide a domestic legal underpinning for vessels used commercially for sport or pleasure to operate on a commercial basis. It is required reading for some, but not for the faint-hearted. Survey well, Mike. For our first story, UK-based Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors launches global standard on responsible use of artificial intelligence in surveying. Sometimes the profession of marine surveying can and should learn from other like-minded learned bodies. So, I take my hat off to the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. I was impressed to read that RICS has published the first global professional standard for the responsible use of AI in surveying practice, which is set to take effect on 9th of March 2026. RICS calls this a decisive move to guide the profession through the rapid evolution of AI technologies. Okay, sir, I understand there are some fundamental differences between surveying ships, boats, vessels, etc., versus houses, buildings and real estate. However, in both disciplines there is the requirement to forensically investigate and inspect, and a report is always generated as the outcome. Further investigation of the standard on my part reveals there are some similarities and crossovers that apply to both professions. Having had a chance to scan read their standard, I wholeheartedly support their bold initiative and, perhaps secretly, wish IIMS had got there first. That said, I have spoken quite extensively about AI at various recent IIMS events but have never thought to crystallize my thoughts into a standard. It is clear to me that there are things in their standard which absolutely apply to marine surveyors, and I would like to share with you some of the more pertinent points. But first, a general word on AI. You do not need me to tell you that AI is a powerful and rapidly emerging tool which is already transforming the way we live and work. Marine surveyors are certainly not immune to the impact and possible uses AI technology offers. But it comes with challenges and RICS has identified several key aspects to consider and to be mindful of. The new standard sets out mandatory requirements and best practice expectations for RICS members and regulated firms worldwide. It addresses the growing integration of AI across valuation, construction, infrastructure, and land services, and aims to ensure these tools are used ethically, transparently, and with professional oversight. Next, the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency has updated its guidance on safe access for small vessels and fishing boats with the release of MGN 591, M&F, Amendment 3. While the amendment itself only updates references, the message is clear: unsafe boarding arrangements continue to cause serious, and sometimes fatal, accidents. Recent MAIB reports highlight falls from ladders, poorly lit pontoons, and gaps between vessels as recurring risks. Who's responsible? Responsibility for safe access depends on the equipment in use. Boat owners, skippers are responsible when using their own ladders or gangways. Marina and harbour operators are responsible when shore-based equipment is provided. In many cases, the responsibility is shared, but the MCA stresses that safety is everyone's concern. Risk assessments. The MCA reminds operators that risk assessments are a legal requirement under health and safety regulations. These should cover all conditions, including darkness, tidal changes, bad weather and late-night returns after time ashore. Safer ways of access. A recommended hierarchy of access is set out. Properly secured gangways with guard rails. Direct step, level access between vessel and pontoon. Fixed ladders on quaysides or pontoons. Portable ladders, only as a last resort and following a risk assessment. In every case, a lifebuoy with a line should be within easy reach. Why it matters. Unsafe access doesn't just put lives at risk, it can lead to detention of vessels, prohibition notices, fines or even imprisonment. For mariners and operators, poor arrangements risk reputational damage, civil claims and costly disruption if surveys or works are delayed. For leisure operators and marina managers, this update is a timely prompt to review the condition and lighting of pontoons, ladders and gangways. Ensure contractors and boat owners use safe access methods. Remind crews and visitors of their own responsibility to act safely. You can download the MGN via the news page on our website. For our next segment, the Saudi Red Sea Authority has released its comprehensive regulatory structure aimed at spurring the growth of recreational yachting as Saudi Arabia positions itself to become a leading marine tourism destination. A news release from the Saudi press agency states the scheme covers Saudi yachts, visiting yachts, and megayacht leasing to establish a safe, sustainable, and investor-friendly maritime environment, and it clearly outlines the responsibilities of each stakeholder, including yacht owners, cruise agents, charter operators, port authorities, captains, and crew members, while streamlining procedures for obtaining licenses and permits that align with broader efforts to modernize the sector's regulatory landscape. Safety is paramount in the new package, requiring all locally registered, foreign-flagged, or chartered yachts to comply with rigorous maritime safety standards, provisions that bring the kingdom into compliance with existing safety standards around the world, including mandatory onboard equipment for rescue, firefighting, and communications, as well as the development of emergency response plans and ongoing crew training to ensure preparedness. Saudi Arabia's commitment to preserving the Red Sea's marine biodiversity and environmental sustainability is evident in the strict controls on pollution. In our next story, Atsamut has introduced Neuron, a fully digital system designed to redefine the navigation experience by making it more intuitive, immediate, and safe, and has completed trials on the Atsamut Fly 53. The focus is on giving owners simpler, more efficient tools to manage their yachts, so that time at sea can be enjoyed without unnecessary complications. The system has been by Atsamut's technical development in collaboration with MDP Tech. It integrates automation, diagnostics, and surveillance, all of which can be controlled through an app or remotely, helping to streamline life on board. Owners can customize the interface to monitor and manage systems such as lighting, climate control, and entertainment, either on board or from a distance. Remote monitoring and diagnostics are also built in, cutting routine and unexpected maintenance by up to 70%. If needed, a smart assistance service allows Atsamut technicians, while respecting privacy settings, to access the system remotely for quick troubleshooting. For example, an entertainment system update or a malfunction can often be handled without requiring a technician to come on board. Neuron's design is based on detailed risk analysis, aimed at minimizing disruptions whether at sea or docked. Its plug-and-play architecture allows individual components, including control units, to be swapped quickly if needed, making repairs more straightforward. Ruggero Gandolfi, Atsamut's technical director, said, "Neuron is a highly innovative system. It is a useful, practical innovation, not an end in itself, but a powerful means. Neuron truly improves the owner's life, not only allowing them to monitor their vessel from home and directly manage certain systems with great ease, but also performing diagnostic tests and reducing unscheduled maintenance. And, at the same time, it allows us as a shipyard to offer an even more reliable product. All this allows us to offer the owner a more peaceful and happy onboard experience." Up next, the Singapore Boating Industry Association has announced plans to grow Singapore's boating market through industry clusters, greater marina access and regional alliances. Arthur Tay, chairman of SUTL Global, has been elected chairman of SBIA with James Wong from the Republic of Singapore Yacht Club taking the role of vice chairman. Other key roles include Kwek Wee Tech from Wanderlust Adventures as secretary and Seor Chi Huat from Raffles Marina as honorary treasurer. For our next report, the hydrogen-powered Pioneer, a remotely operated and unmanned vessel, has received the UK's first certification under Workboat Code 3 ahead of its upcoming trials. Lloyd's Register, which issued the certification under authorization from the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, reports it represents a significant development in the evolution of regulatory pathways for uncrewed and autonomous vessels operating in UK waters. Anderson Chaplow, principal specialist at LR, said, "This certification represents a major step forward, not just for ACUA Ocean or LR, but for the wider UK maritime industry. It proves that certification of small, complex ROUVs under Annex 2 is achievable and sets a precedent for others in the industry to follow. It also shows what's possible when developers, regulators, and classification societies collaborate to bring emerging technologies safely into operation." Developed by Plymouth-based ACUA Ocean, Pioneer is a hydrogen-powered, long-endurance uncrewed surface vessel designed for offshore surveillance, monitoring, and inspection. The vessel, which is 14.2 meters, 46.5 feet, in length, can handle payloads of up to 6.5 tons from a 20-foot ISO container in the moonpool. It uses a pontoon design and is capable of safe deployment of sensor and system payloads in up to significant 4-meter wave heights. Pioneer features an integrated hydrogen fuel cell propulsion system, advanced autonomous navigation, and remote command capabilities. The companies report the modular design tailored to a variety of offshore operations, such as environmental monitoring, maritime domain awareness, and offshore infrastructure inspection. ACUA Ocean became the first vessel to achieve compliance with the UK's first certification for a remotely operated and unmanned vessel under the MCA Workboat Code Edition 3 Annex 2, highlights LR introduced by the MCA in December 2023. The WBC3 requirements set out safety and operational standards for ROVs operating in UK waters. LR was the first certifying authority to be authorised by the MCA to issue certificates under Annex 2 and has now become the first to complete a full certification process for an operational ROUV. Next, ABB has integrated a comprehensive scope of technologies on board Feedship Breakthrough. The vessel was constructed by Dutch yacht builder Feedship. Launched in May 2025, the privately owned 118.8-metre yacht will be among the first vessels in the world to feature multi-megawatt fuel cell technology. ABB's scope of supply comprises the onboard DC grid power system platform and two 3.2-megawatt Zipod electric propulsion units, which minimise noise and vibrations on board. ABB's power and energy management system optimises energy use on board, while the ABB Ability Marine Pilot Control digital solution enables seamless transition between joystick operations and dynamic positioning, simplifying docking. As part of the integrated scope, ABB has also provided shipside shore connection technology and remote diagnostic services. The 3-megawatt hydrogen fuel cell system onboard Breakthrough can generate sufficient energy to operate the yacht's hotel load and amenities with emission-free power from hydrogen. Moreover, it can provide enough power for up to a week of silent operations at anchor or emission-free navigation at 10 knots while leaving harbours or cruising in protected marine zones. Jan Bart Verkeil, Feedship Director, CEO Royal Van Lent Shipyard, said, "Breakthrough perfectly demonstrates how passenger comfort and environmental protection can go hand in hand on board the world's biggest superyachts. We are grateful to ABB whose extensive technical expertise and dedicated support have been crucial in bringing this project to fruition." In our next segment, the Leisure Marine Association for the Middle East and North Africa has issued an end-of-season update, highlighting a significant expansion in membership and a notable increase in its program of activities. LMA MENA membership has now surpassed 100 companies, with 9 new members joining during the recent yachting season. The association has also strengthened its regional footprint by appointing 2 new national ambassadors for Bahrain and Oman. Throughout the season, LMA MENA has hosted a series of well-received initiatives, including a successful networking event and workshop. The association also gained visibility through its feature in the Guide Officiel Dubai Harbour Marinas, Best of Yachting, reflecting its growing influence in the Middle East's leisure marine sector. Other notable developments include Abu Dhabi Maritime's official launch of the expanded 2025 Maritime Awards, and Gulfcraft's partnership with port, customs, and free zone authorities to simplify yacht ownership and registration processes across the UAE. Up next, the United States Coast Guard has released the 2024 Flag State Control Annual Report, showing the number of deficiencies issued increased by 2% from 2023. The report includes deficiency and detention rates for each inspected domestic vessel type, performance metrics for recognized organizations that complete statutory activities on our behalf, and marine casualty data by vessel type. In 2024, U.S. Coast Guard marine inspectors conducted 21,187 inspections on 17,765 U.S. flagged vessels, identifying 30,634 deficiencies. 40 vessels received flag state detentions due to serious substandard conditions. You can download the report at iamsusa.com. For our next story, Tokyo Kizen and Marindos have officially launched Japan's first pure battery-powered EV harbour tugboat development project. The EV harbour tugboat will operate in the ports of Yokohama and Kawasaki and aims to contribute to zero GHG emissions from the ports in accordance with the carbon-neutral port policy. In January 2023, Tokyo Kizen put into service Tiger, Japan's first series hybrid electric-powered tugboat equipped with a large-capacity 2,486 kWh battery. Building on 2.5 years of operating experience with electric-powered tugs, This project is now advancing to the next stage in developing and constructing a pure battery-powered EV tugboat. The tugboat would combine a large capacity onboard battery system and MW-class fast chargers. The project will span 5 years with detailed feasibility study and concept design in 2025, basic design in 2026, detailed design in 2027, construction of the vessel and fast charging pier works starting in 2028, and commercial service at the ports of Yokohama and Kawasaki starting in 2030. Next, NMMA, in partnership with ITR Economics, has released the latest update to the U.S. Boat Building Production Index, offering a refined outlook on the trajectory of boat production through 2027. The April 2025 report shows that production continues to underperform expectations, prompting a downward revision to the forecast. Annual boat building production is now expected to decline further through early 2026 before beginning a modest recovery in the second half of 2027. While there are signs of improvement, the pace of recovery for boat manufacturing is expected to be slower than initially forecast due to continued macroeconomic uncertainty. Notably, tariffs present a potential downside risk, as increased inflationary pressure could further dampen consumer demand. In addition to the macroeconomic uncertainty and continued pressure on boating consumers and businesses, NMMA is continually monitoring the short and long-term state of recreational boating. In our next report, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has published a report into the grounding of Barge Cordova provider earlier this year. What happened? On January 11, 2025, at 02:50 local time, the integrated tug and barge Crystal Sea, Cordova provider was transient's Prince William Sound when the four lines connecting the tug to the barge parted, causing the barge to uncouple from the tug. The barge drifted, eventually grounding on the coast of Axel Lind Island, Alaska, about 06:35. There were no injuries, and no pollution was reported. The barge Cordova provider, valued at $2.9 million, was declared a constructive total loss by the vessel's owner. The Crystal Sea was not damaged. The report added that when the lines parted, the seas were 4 to 6 feet with about 35 knot winds on the vessel's port quarter, weather conditions that the vessel regularly encountered on its normal transit route. Since it was nighttime when the incident occurred, the mate and crew member in the wheelhouse did not see what caused the lines to part or which line parted first. 5 days before the casualty, the captain visually inspected the four push lines and noted no deficiencies. A post-casualty visual inspection of the recovered lines by a technician from a local industrial and maritime supply company found that the lines were in fair condition with no visible deficiencies and determined that all the push lines and the soft shackle parted due to the lines exceeding their breaking strength, likely due to shock loading. Given that the ITB was in regularly encountered conditions and the lines were reported as properly rigged, it is undetermined how the first push line that parted was shock loaded. Once the first push line parted, this likely began a cascading failure as the remaining three push lines took up the additional strain. Cause. The NTSB determined that the probable cause of the grounding of the barge Cordova provider was due to shock loading that led to the parting of the push lines connecting the Cordova provider to the tug Crystal Sea. You can read the full report at iimsusa.com. And for our final story, the Canal and River Trust's national boat count, conducted across the charity's waterways each year, has seen a 1.5% increase in boat numbers together with an increase in unlicensed boats, with evasion standing at 9.9%. Nationally, 33,080 boats were recorded on the Trust's enforceable waters. The most populous regions, London and South East and the West Midlands, saw increases of 3.5% and 3.6% respectively. Numbers of boats without home moorings increased by 11.9% to 8,519 boats, while boats with home moorings declined by 1.8% to 23,889 boats. Approximately 92% of boats with home moorings are licensed compared to 84% of boats without home moorings. As a charity, the Trust uses the income from licensing to help fund lock repairs, provide boater facilities, and maintain canals for navigation and, following the creation of a new national license, compliance and enforcement team last September, the Trust has pledged to address unlicensed boats faster. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.